outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
I feel like I'm going to hold you hostage here, dude.
It's all right.
I finally got you in my house.
Yeah. You got me.
We'll do a twofer, and interestingly enough, I probably have enough podcasts to get me all the way through August. So
sweet. Well, you're going to be up at Shaver. I'm going
to
be up at
Oh, my gosh. I got to leave Monday. We've got 3 weeks that we're going to just get away.
Oh, nice.
And kids, grandkids will be up for part of that.
We'll be up there.
Some relatives. You're going to be up there, too. Awesome.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking for every year. This is the first little vacation time we've had this year, so this will be...
Good rest.
For Sarah and I. Well, we did have a little bit in Breckenridge. We went to Breckenridge to hike in the 10 inches of snow, which was really a big mistake.
Yeah, we put our boat in, and there was still snow on the beach.
You put your boat in the lake at Shaver?
Yeah.
And yeah,
it was still snow on the beach. I just said, like, no, it wasn't really early. It was still snowy.
It was early.
Man, it was normal season.
Up there in February?
No. It was late May.
Anyway.
It's like, wow.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And we're back in the house. So here we are. Listen, our discussion we just finished up, which was last week's podcast, which I don't know when it'll play,
sure,
somewhere down the road. I got this little paragraph yesterday and I couldn't figure out what it was. This lady I know back from Ohio, she sent this thing to me and it was breathtaking. It kind of gets to what I was talking about in the last podcast about you and I come from a place where knowing God's love and making wholesome decisions is a little more in our purview, a little more, particularly if you have resources and you have friends, if you have healthy relationship, it's easier to manage the unhealthy ones, I think. It's easier.
Yeah, that's not that controversial.
So this is a lady who's writing a manuscript, and no, I'm not working on this one.
Nice.
I just get the opinion she just started it. But anyway, she's writing a manuscript about a kidnapping. And then a kid and a mom are reunited. And she sends me this paragraph. She wrote this like a while back and didn't realize when she wrote it, it was God speaking to her.
Huh.
But it's about this boy who's kidnapped 5-6 years by a dad who's not a good dad.
Okay.
I guess this is a painful 4 or 5 years. He's reunited with his mom. And the mom's really confused. She says, "What's happened to my son? I thought he would realize who I was and remember what it was like with me, and he would go back to being who we were together, and I knew he would have nightmares and problems, I guess, but I thought his memory would be sufficient to reconnect with me." That's the mom's kind of...
Okay.
So imagine a kid kidnapped 4 or 5 years. He's kidnapped like at 5 or 6, or age 4, I guess. Kidnapped age 4. He's been gone 4 or 5 years, so now he's 9. He comes back to mom, and mom's still in the place where she was when the kid left in the relationship, right?
A lot of life has happened.
But this kid has been under someone else's dominance and told all kinds of lies about his mom. So being reconnected with mom is not such a great thing.
Right.
Now think about this paragraph in terms of, it's a couple paragraphs, but in terms of our relationship to God, not just in this story, because it's how the woman sent it to me. She said, "I realized this is what was going on with me and God."
Life can kidnap you.
Because she was one of those people that have a tough time connecting with God. And
right.
It's not just life. I think it's pointing to some of the errors, some of the lies of religion.
Right.
Some of the lies of the world that get in our... He said, and so she's like a therapist explaining to this other lady. She said, "I know this is very difficult. I could explain what happens with trauma, and I will perhaps get to that later. But for now, I want you to think about this treatment plan as an adoption of sorts." Yeah, that's your child in there. Yes, somewhere in that psyche is memories of a good mother, but the trauma, the lies have so overwritten that part of his brain, there is no ability to recall those memories. And even if he does, he doesn't trust those memories of his own experience, but believes the lies he was told for so long. It's a type of brainwashing. He has to be deprogrammed in a way, so you want to lavish all this love that you've held back, and he simply isn't ready for it. We don't want to program him to receive you. We want to set him free. We don't want him to perform, understand? We want him to realize he is who he is so that the lies simply fall away and they become irrelevant. That means a long and slow process. But there is hope for full restoration. It could be a process of months. It could take years. It's a journey you both will need to make. For now, I want you to work hard to restrain yourself. I know this is counterintuitive, but keep your distance. He needs to see your presence as non-threatening. Keep your speech to short, encouraging sentences. "It's okay. I'm your mom, remember? You're okay." No passionate declarations of love. He was told that you lied when you said it the first time, so he's conditioned to be afraid of you. Instead, think of it in terms of what does love look like, practically speaking. You have to love him in the way he needs to be loved right now. I want you to wait, no matter how long it takes, until he invites you closer. Mm. In that paragraph, that thing just disturbed me when I read it. Because it shows that people who've been...
Spiritually, that happens to a ton of people.
Doesn't it? And I'm getting a lot of email this summer, interestingly enough, and which is something I'm going to figure out what it is I do with it. But from people who are saying, man, I've been trying to connect with God for years. I pray, nothing happens. I seek God. I let go. I risk stuff. Nothing happens. God doesn't show up. And I go, you know what? There's something in this thing about how God relates to traumatized people. And we're wanting him to just, you know, rip out the eternity and grab us around
the
shoulders.
Yeah, we want
the
magic wand microwave deal.
Or just this overbearing God who comes at us, and yet we don't realize how much in us, because of how we've been conditioned by the lies we've believed, we'll recoil from that.
Yeah.
The idea of you, I love this phrase about your presence needs to be non-threatening. Because you're wooing your way back into your own. Yes, it's your son. Yes, you loved him for 4 years freely.
He doesn't know you.
But now he doesn't know you. He's been lied to about you. He's been lied to about love. He doesn't know anything anymore, and he's afraid. And now this overbearing woman wants to scoop him up and kiss him all over the face. And he's like, I have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah, who are you?
Yeah, and I was told you're a bad person, a liar, and a fraud, and or that you didn't care for 5 years. I live with this man who's abusing me, and you don't even show up to help me and care for me and get me out of it. And man, I think this so much explains how I see people thinking about God. If you've been traumatized, abused, neglected, if you've had some of those experiences in your life, or you feel like God's done that to you because religion made you promises that God didn't make, but you're holding him to account for.
Wow. It's like people need to stop, play that back and hear that again, because I think that is the reason for the massive amount of disappointment.
It is
for people. They really do believe that somehow I was promised this, I am owed this,
and I've done my part.
Yeah, but it's like, but God was never a part of that conversation.
Right.
You made that up, or someone else gave that to you, but it wasn't from him. And it's left you shipwrecked and ticked. And you're just going like, golly. I mean, I know so many people that would describe the geography of where they're at. And it's interesting because, you know, as I'm listening to you share this, God doesn't have the insecurity or the anxiety or the urgency of, I got to fix this right now, that oftentimes we do. Which I don't think is love. I think it's our anxiety. You know, because if you really knew who you were, you really knew who that person was, you really knew what they went through, and you knew this is going to take some time, you don't need to be in a rush because you're not needing to prove something. You're not so much trying to fix someone as you are trying to love them.
Yeah.
And a love that is forced is not a love that will be received.
Yeah.
Even though you think your motive is so sincere, I think a lot of times that's serving self more than it is really for that person.
And I guess when I read this, when my heart really breaks, is for people who have been, whether it's the lies of the world, that God doesn't love, doesn't care. Look at Syria, look at the weather, look at all this suffering people go through. God doesn't love, he doesn't care, he's distant. You get that lie. Or you get, God's here to serve your every whim and fix your every need, like you said. Just he wants to fix things right now, and that it's not happening. There's something wrong with you, or there's something wrong with him, or he doesn't exist. Instead of, because this, when I read this little excerpt from this manuscript, I see the long arc of somebody who comes out of darkness and into the light. I would love to see it happen in about 16 seconds. I would love to happen overnight. I would love people just to, you know, come forward. The old days of coming forward to the altar and praying it all through. And the next morning you wake up and you're a brand new person, and the sky's bluer and the trees are greener and all that good stuff. I mean, I'd love that. And that does happen very rarely. But the slow dance of a broken, injured, fearful life, which is what we talked about in the last podcast. We talked about, you know, you don't have to live inside your fears. Well, if you're in fight or flight mode and that's how you've lived your whole life, you and I talking about not living there, not helpful.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, people go, what do you mean not live in my fears? And God has this dance of coming to us and saying, I want to find a non-threatening way to crawl, not just to fix everything out here that you think if this was all fixed, you'd be better, because you wouldn't be. And the slowness with which that process happens. And I know it's true, because the letters I get now from people saying it's not working for me, I got those letters 5 years ago from other people who are saying now, man, I have found my way, more God's work than theirs, but I found my way into this relationship with God that seemed impossible 5 years ago. So I know, I love the hungers there. I love that people are stripping down the whole why me and why is, I love the honesty of the dialogue. And if that's where you are, if you really think God doesn't care and that God isn't your father and he doesn't love you and he's not even really real, he may just be the Santa Claus your parents still believe in. If that's where you are, I don't mind you talking about it with me. I don't mind you struggling with it. Because the struggle is all part of God getting out the angst as he's finding a way to love you from that non-threatening, I'm here when you're ready to come to me, not I'm going to just overbearingly force my way on you.
Yeah, the slow dance of real transformation. You know, essentially, when you think like people are problems to be fixed, it's like, well, if I just fix it, It'll all be better. But it's like, but if it's a life that someone is living, I don't know that the external little adjustment really changes the systems by which that person has learned to live life.
Yeah.
And I think that's what God's looking to do, is teach us a different way to live this life, which is with him, not us fearing we're all on our own. And I think that's, you know, like being one to that place of trust. When I awake and there's that sense that he's there, I have a much different day than if I were to awake in the anxiety of it's all up to me.
Right. Absolutely.
And I don't know that there's just a light switch to flick that makes that change. That's a reality that I think it takes time to sort of settle into with some life experience that reinforces that to be true. Not the, I'm hoping it's true, or I'm trying to believe it's
true. Yeah, I'm trying to make it true. Yeah, and I can pretty well bet there is no light switch.
Yeah.
You know, people are looking for one, and I just go, you know what? This somehow God...
But even that's born out of anxiety.
It is. And control. If I can just find a switch to flip,
yeah.
And God's waiting for me to flip a switch. God's not waiting for anything. God is engaging you. And in that engagement, you may not see it, because right now it is not a blessing to you. It doesn't set you at ease, because it's actually threatening the fear flight thing. It's actually coming at in a way that challenges your need to control your life. And so sometimes as God nudges us towards love, we grab tighter to control. I see people do that all the time, just in even my own relationship with them. If I'm trying to love them and trying to make something, and they're suspicious, why are you doing this? Particularly when you're giving stuff away. You know, people are always like, okay, what do you want? I really don't want anything. I thought this would help you. Really? And so the very act of generosity can become threatening to someone who sees every act as a threatened act.
No, I think we only genuinely receive love to the degree that we think we deserve it.
Yeah.
I wish that wasn't true. Somehow God is able to get past that and adjust that. But the reality is, for most people, you love them extravagantly, and if they don't have a good sense of self, you haven't done them a wonderful thing. They feel indebted. They feel pressured.
Or pitied.
Yeah. Somehow it's not the what I thought it was. You know?
Yes.
And it's like, golly, why? Because I think.
You sound like Gomer Pyle there when you're there.
Yeah. Oh, I could do it.
Golly.
I think sometimes I've recognized in me, it's the anxiety in me that's somehow wanting to be deeper in a relationship than I really am. And it's like somehow I want to think of it as being this marvelous thing, but it's like that will take time. That doesn't happen just instantly. Yeah. And if you think it does, most of that's fantasy interpretation than it really is reality, because it will take some time to see if that's so.
Yeah.
And as I think I've matured a little bit, as I think I've matured, I've been less anxious of needing to feel so amazingly best friends with people that I meet. You just end up going like, oh, I had a nice time with them. But let's watch a lot of life happen to see just how deep and how real that is. And that's not cynical and skeptical. That's just sort of not as anxious on the inside of needing to call something what it's not yet become.
Yeah. And if you're fearful and insecure, then it doesn't matter what somebody who may genuinely love you, generosity come to you, that you can't read into it whatever kind of ulterior motive you want to read into it, right? Like we talk about pity or whatever. So that if God's really coming at me in a loving, gracious, tender way, and I'm already inside everybody's out to use me and just, you know, and I've heard people say it about God. I'm afraid if I really get close to God, man, he's going to send me someplace I don't want to go, make me do someplace for a relative I don't want to do. I mean, the whole thing is...
Yeah, the will of God is the kryptonite, exactly what you don't want to do.
Yeah, that love means I want to use you. That's what love means to some people, particularly when you're fearful and insecure. Huh. And if you're not worthy of love, if you're not worthy of the Father's love, then what you've got to think is, oh, he just wants to take advantage of me for some reason. So he's going to act loving, but it's actually a setup. And then when you don't get something you want, then you go, oh, see, he doesn't love me because he didn't give me the thing I wanted, the thing I thought love would compel him to give. And there's so much of that in my email from people who really struggle with this. It's the ongoing assumption that I can perceive the motive of the deity, and it's mostly read through my own fears and insecurities.
Wow.
And I think one of the things
that you don't really receive anything.
No, you can't. How can you? That's one of the things Dave and I were talking about, that to receive your security inside the love of a father, to receive that from him changes everything about the way you live and perceive life around you. Huh. But if you can't get to that point, because maybe like a kidnapped child, you know, the whole thing is threatening and you're unwilling to risk, like we talked about last week. And so that's scary to you. And so you keep living inside this fear. And then you're saying, but yeah, God's not speaking to me. And we don't realize how much we're blocking that out. And, you know, well, so how do we get past that? You say God's big enough to get past it. And I believe he is too. I think all we have to do, it's a simple, three small steps. I'll sell them to you next week.
You know, the most helpful thing has typically been someone who's a little older, a little less front and center in what I'm kind of embroiled in, and is able to provide some helpful commentary that helps me see what God might be doing that I've somehow become blocked to. You know, like you meant, when I'm in that fear and that insecure anxiety place, I don't really pick up all the correct receptors.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know,
you don't have many receptors up.
Yeah. It's like I have shields up, shields up, down, most everything retracted. Is bouncing off.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to see what God is doing when I'm living, you know, behind my protective shields. Yeah. And I end up going like, well, he's not doing anything. And it's like, no, he's doing a ton, but a lot's not penetrating. And he's not forcing it, because that would freak you out.
It would.
And somehow we're stuck on the inside thinking, well, if it was real, I'd feel. And it's like, yeah, but you got your shield up. You're not able to receive something right now. And that's not a what's wrong with you. That's a until we can kind of get the shields down a little bit.
Well, until God, yeah, God can kind of work that out with us. But that's what I want to help people open to. If you're one of those, you know, traumatic life kind of shields up,
life sensors
retracted.
You.
Yeah. Man, you got my compassion. You do. Yeah. I grew up in a loving home. I wasn't predisposed to mistrust God's love when I began to find it. Even what religion tried to twist in me, there was something that always held it at arm's length because it didn't make sense with other things I was reading in scripture. So I was always like, I don't know if that's the right thing. So I didn't give it a lot of place in my life at times. At other times, I was the law enforcement officer for the body of Christ. So other times, I had to enforce it on others, even as I had questions about it myself. But the idea that if that's where you are, it will really help you. And I would ask God, you just talk about somebody who can come alongside you. And I don't mean the spiritual mentor type who wants to start a Bible study.
No, it's never been that person.
It's a friend.
Yeah.
It's a friend who knows God. It's a friend who knows how to love like God, and they don't force themselves, and they don't do accountability stuff. They're just in your life to make an observation, to ask the question that may open, or just an example, someone to see. Like when I was with Kevin Smith, I talked about this last week on the podcast, in Australia, and what 10 days Sarah and I were in their home and just watched how he lived, and we were running errands, and they were just starting something new in their, and at the time, but they didn't have a lot of resource, and they were just trusting God as provider, and I got to see what that looked like. And it wasn't pie in the sky, I'll do whatever I want, God will pay for it. It was really walking with God, making decisions inside this growing conviction in the heart, and you watch somebody live that way. And I've said this before, my trust meter, like when I was with him, just pegged. I was like, things in my own life, I could just say, wow, man, that I can live this way. And then when I got away from that and I'm back home in the States, that trust meter kind of backs down closer to where it had been before. But each time, and so does it help to be with people who can love you the way God loves? Yes.
Profoundly.
And ask God. People say, I don't know anybody like that. Just ask him.
But even without that, you know, when something's hurting inside or there's pain, you're trying to deal with it, there's a dimension of being honest with it without trying to sort of blame and accuse and get even with somebody. I mean, you know, like if you're trying to reconcile something, when someone's hurt and they're really wanting to restore the relationship, they talk about their pain differently. They talk about what they're feeling differently.
Yeah, it's true.
When someone's wanting to get even, or they're wanting to be right, or they're wanting you to feel what it is you've done to them.
Now you're depressing me, dude.
It's a whole different conversation.
It is, absolutely.
And I sort of feel like, well, what conversation are you having with God? Are you wanting to declare him guilty as unloving, unavailable, unfatherly? And are you wanting to prove it with him?
Because you're saying that in a certain snarky way.
Yes, I am. Okay. I'm sorry. But I sort of feel like that's a profound difference. And it's like the guy inside me that goes like, wait a minute, you're talking, you know, like when, because I think it's important to find the capacity to be honest. But when some people vent their honesty, they're not just being honest and open and available. They got that I wanna hit back. I'm hurting so bad. I want someone else to feel this.
Yeah, I want to injure to make me feel better about my injury.
And I've never seen a lot of that go anywhere really productive, unless it's kind of like bursting a bad boil and you get the pus out. I mean, I get that. I'm not frightened of that, of, oh, you can't talk to God that way. It's like, no. The one guy you could talk to that way is God.
Right.
But there's,
but if you're looking to make him defensive, you will find out this God has not a defensive bone in his entire body. You can accuse him of all kinds of stuff, and God's like, I'll show you better than that.
Yeah, no, he's never going to respond to you like insecure humans would. But I do think it actually furthers and delays the journey, because you're not approaching from an ability to receive. You're throwing punches. And can God receive your punches? Yeah, of course he can.
Yeah.
Do you have to throw them? I don't know if you have to throw them, but if you've got nothing else, then throw them. But at some point, there has to be a letting go of the hostilities, and there needs to be that sort of that empty space of honest request of just saying, help me. And there needs to be some humility and some availability that enters into your capacity to receive something.
But you can't have it until you have it, and that's the dilemma.
Yeah.
If the humility
it's like that can't be forced.
If the humility isn't really there, it's not going to come. But I think if you have enough hope that maybe Brad and I are not lying to you, that maybe – because I've been accused of this twice in the last 6 months. Talking about a relationship with God that's only for a special few as if it's available to us all.
But it is available to us all.
And I've said to people, you know what? I wouldn't do one thing that I'm doing. If I had any sense that this relationship was only for people like Brad and I wouldn't write books. I wouldn't podcast. It's just the cruelest thing in the world to come around people and say, well, you could have this, but you can't.
Not really.
It'd be cruel.
Psych.
But that's the fear, right? Because, and it's all defense mechanism. Almost every bit of how people, as they think they're inviting God into their life, they're actually pushing him away.
Yeah.
They're making the observations. They're making the conclusions. They're making the assumptions that fit their view of the world.
Born out of pain.
Right. And I get it, and fear, and I get why that's where it is. That's why I read this paragraph. I love that you can come out of such a twisted background that love has to come at you so slowly and so gently so that you learning to open to it. Because people, again, the question I get, why is this so hard? And I say, I don't think it's hard. I think it's just real. God knows what it really takes to get to the real you. And invite you out.
Yeah.
He knows how to do it. If it was writing your name in the stars, would do it at night, he would do it. Yeah. That he doesn't do that kind of thing says, no, there's something so much more real here. And trust me, I've been God for a long time. I really know how to do this. I know how to get in your psyche and begin to change the way you think about me, the world around you, to invite you out of the fears and insecurities that drive you, to give you a sense of peace. And I can bring the relationships into your life that will help that. I can do all of that because I'm a God who loves you more than anyone on this planet ever has, ever will. But that somehow, if you can just, maybe you don't see that yet, but you can think, well, at least Wayne thinks it's true and Brad thinks it's true. Maybe I'll try this. I'll give God some space. And I mean, space, years of God making himself known, inviting. Don't look for the quick fix. Don't look for the flash in the pan miracle.
It's so weird. You actually spend some time in the scriptures. Nothing happens very fast. I mean, nothing.
Right.
Even in the fullness of time. Well, it took a long time to get to then.
But if you're reading thousands of years in just a couple of pages, you think it's fast.
Yeah. I think we make that mistake and we looked at it. It's like, I think because God isn't insecure, he's not in a hurry like most of us are. Hmm. And I think we want God to like fix me, just change it. It's like, come on. And it's like, I want it yesterday. And it's like, well, if that was going to work and if that was going to be in your best interest, it would have. And that's not a fatalistic comment. That's just sort of like, wait a minute. God's looking to do the real thing, the enduring thing, the lasting thing. Therefore, that quick fix thing that might be my preference rarely is the thing that really is going to be the enduring transformation. I mean, it's like that, you know, it's like you were talking about that the slow dance, or somehow I got that in my head. It's like, you ever watched people on a dance floor that really do know each other? They're absolutely loving that slow dance. Whereas two other people that don't really know each other, it's as awkward as it comes.
One may be enjoying it more than the other.
But you look at that and you just go like, God is into the knowing. And it really wants, he really does want it both ways. Where it's like, he knows us. But it's going to take us a while to recognize just how profoundly true that is in a way that he actually knows me better than I know me. And we asked this question around the dinner table last week, just, you know, how is it that you've come to know that God really loves you? You know, the personal you, not the confessional, the Bible's told me so.
Not because I'm one of those humans God said right. He loves, yeah.
And it was fun to just sort of listen as you know, various folks around the table shared. And it was, they really did come to a place of going, like, there was a moment that I just kind of realized, wait a minute, I'm not orchestrating this. This is not of my doing. There is something beyond just me that is very personally engaged in what's going on. And it was just, it was fun to hear those stories, because you just go, like, okay, that's, you're talking about a real encounter of life, not a made up something. Not a, you should have this experience, not the, oh, I, you know, somebody prayed and I felt this. It was more in the living of life, all of a sudden you realize God's a part of this and he knows me. Those, and it's just, I listened to one of my kids share something where he just kind of felt like, wow, I think that's a lot more powerful than they've yet allowed to be true. Because I'm listening to all the details and I'm going, like, wow, I see God all over that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't quite see that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, I could force this on them and reframe that. And I could make them feel as though they should have felt something, but it wouldn't have helped.
Hmm.
And so it was more just, I listened.
Yeah.
And I just kind of went, I don't need to prove this, but to me, that's God there. And so I just gently reinforced a little bit of, you might spend more time pondering that, because
might go down that road a little further.
Yeah.
There's some stuff down there. Yeah.
But when you were reading this paragraph, I sat there going, like, you know, it the younger me would have debated that.
Hmm.
And would have wanted to force it to a conclusion I wanted. The little older me is a lot more content to just go, like, that's not going to help them.
Yeah. And this is why, don't you think, we get so much religion? Could it be easier for you and I to sit here and sell a 3-step process to something you control so you can make
it
yourself?
It would sell like hotcakes,
maybe. Oh, my gosh. Look, we double the money from this podcast alone. Just the whole idea of the whole religion, it reduces what you and I are trying to describe, what I would stake my life on. This is why the new covenant, so that we could actually be connected to God, not so we could start a new religion of New Testament principles that we're supposed to believe and act and follow and ritualize. But it would be so much easier to start something, write something, do a manual that just puts people through their paces and it puts it all in their control. You just believe this and do that, act this way. And my shelves are full of it. Your shelves are probably full of it too.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff written there. Instead of sitting here and saying, you know what, this is a process that defies my ability to control it for you, your ability to control it for you. This is something that God wants to invite us into, and it's a reality that challenges the most twisted places in the human heart as God, by the power of his Spirit, makes access to the inner part of our being and begins to rewrite the script on our heart and the things we've been taught and the lies we've been told. And he could untangle all those lives tomorrow, and it would overwhelm you. You wouldn't be able to live it. So there's that gentleness of God, and man, it'd be so much easier to sell you a 3-point plan, because we could control that. And then we could blame you if it didn't happen because you weren't working it right. But to say you really need God to access you in a way, and yeah, find somebody to help encourage it, maybe suspend some assumptions you're making that kind of detract from it. But ultimately, it's you and God on a journey, and you've got to sit down some point and say, okay, God, will you help me? I want to know this. And I know it argues against everything I believe and think, and I'm not even sure you're there, but if you are, I want to be in a place to just open my heart to let you show yourself to me.
See, those, I think for a lot of people who have been hurt and disappointed, to have the honesty of that conversation isn't very easy. Because they have to be open to the very thing that they're afraid of, that I'll do that, and then nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like they almost turn these moments into a crisis of faith, because it's like there's so much riding on it. And I just end up going, like, gosh, when I've talked with those kind of people, it's like, part of me is trying to like, how do I take the pressure off this? There's still that human striving, performing. If I do it wrong, it won't. And it's like, he's so much bigger than that.
Yeah.
But you can't just, I mean, it's easy for me to say. They don't know that. They don't feel that at all. And I just knew the breakthrough moments that have happened for me weren't orchestrated, but I yielded in honesty to them because I just realized I can't do this. I tried. I really did. I did everything I knew to do, but I know it's not working and I'm still hungry for him.
Yeah.
I've really found there's not a moment of those that he didn't audience in some way.
Yeah, that's why the advantage to being young and radical in your commitment to Jesus and making all these mistakes for a long time at a young age when you just, because people talk about, you know, God can't really move in you until he breaks you. I hate that kind of language. I do. But what's often true is I've tried everything else I could do. And when I got to the end of my rope, finally God came through. But I don't think it's that. I think it's what you're saying. We've done everything that we can and it wasn't enough. And then when you've done all that you can, and the more you can do, I think the further, because I can do a lot. You're not an yeah. incapable person. Yeah. So it's not that you and I didn't do an awful lot to make God, to work the scriptures, to make it be what we thought it said.
It was
it would
a system to be worked. I could work it.
Boy, we did. I mean, I had about 14 systems that we did. Okay, that one didn't work. I'm going to do another one. And when you finally exhausted all those and those blow up in your face, and it's not God breaking you. It's the lies breaking you.
Yeah, that's good.
So that you don't have to keep saying, okay, this is up to me. It's not up to you. But we do open the door. We do. But this kid who's been kidnapped, that finally he's going to at some point say, okay, I got nothing else. I'm going to take a risk on that woman. I'm going to open a little bit. I'm going to see how she is. We're going to see if he's not going to just run to her arms in one big sweeping moment. Right. That's how the Hollywood movie ends. But that's not how life works. But if he can at least get enough courage to go, okay, what's the only thing I got? Yeah, the dad I know is a creep, and I don't know all that I'm understand or lie about, and in my heart, I don't know any of that stuff, but this person seems to care about me, mm-hmm. and I'm going to start down that road. And yeah, if you find that somebody you thinks cares about you starts abusing you, walk away. But the God's not going to be like that. He's going to be slower than you want. It's going to be less ostentatious than you've been led to believe, but God does seep into the reality of our heart and transform us from the inside out so that we get freer and freer about trusting who he is, being relaxed in who we are,
uh-huh.
knowing what I can't control and therefore don't have to have anxiety over, and then to learn to live in rest in the Father's working. That's the goal. But that's like, that's down the track. That doesn't start there on day two.
Yeah, the journey's several decades of.
And you need lots of encouragement, man. People feel I'm all alone. I got nobody. My goodness, that's most of why I have the stuff I have up at Lifestream. It is to be an encouragement to people.
Just the fact if someone is listening to this particular podcast, I would tend to think there's some orchestration in that. That if it resonates with where they're at. It is very possible to interpret that as, oh, maybe God is reaching out to me through a couple of yahoos.
Well, because you're still here.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of those things that, you know, people are always afraid they committed the unpardonable sin when they were 8 years old or 10 years old. And because they said something about the Holy Spirit. I hear that frequently. But if you think you have, isn't that your excuse to keep God at bay? Even if you don't want to keep him at bay. It's just, you can always exclude yourself out of this fear. And I hope what we're offering today, man, come learn, lean away from your fears, lean into a God who wants to straighten out the lies that control you and set you free in the love that embraces you.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.